difference.
You know. Well, but we know that young people are stupid.
Some are.
No, it's.
I didn't say that.
No, it is. It's part of the benefit of being young. You're allowed to be stupid. You can get away with it.
I know.
All right, now look. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Comedy Death Star, the podcast that digs into the dark side of comedy. I'm your host, Denzel Myers. Our guest this week is improviser, comedian, writer, teacher, singer, blah, 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 Phyllis Katz. All that stuff is correct, right?
No, I'm not a comedian.
You're not a comedian?
I'm an actor.
Come on.
I'm an actor, and I do, and I have a background in comedy, but when I think comedian...
You think joke teller.
I think stand-up, which is not, to put that down, is phenomenal. I just, it's just not what I do.
I'm going to cross it out here.
Okay. So...
In the next hour, we'll see if I can get Phyllis to confess something on the show that she's never told anyone else, including or especially her husband. But first, a message from our corporate overlords. Comedy Death Star is a production of Actors Comedy Studio and ACSDigital.tv. I'm Denzel Myers. Our guest today is total Hollywood newbie with stars in her eyes, Phyllis Katz. I wrote that because I told you I had somebody here last week who... is just arriving.
Right. And we're always just all arriving.
Well, but you're
all
the opposite arriving. Of a Hollywood newbie, and I left it in. So.
What do you mean?
You're not
the opposite of a Hollywood newbie.
You're not a Hollywood newbie.
I'm ancient.
You're not a newbie.
No, I'm not.
Were you ever a newbie?
Sure.
Anywhere? Are you one of those old soul people?
Wow.
I don't even know what that means. I think I'm a very young soul.
Here's what...
So I don't even get it, but
well,
I'm asking because that's...
I think some people are young-spirited, and I like to think I have a, you know, a youthful spirit, spirit. By that, I mean people who are always exploring and always interested and curious. But old souls, sure, I think they're old souls. I have a friend whose son now is in his 30s, and when he was born... I saw him 2 days after he was born, and that kid looked right in my eyes, and it gave me a shiver. I said, "This kid's been here before."
Well, whatever that means, I think I'm a toddler soul.
Okay, that works.
That just maybe I'm wrong. So, just to get this stuff out of the way, you were a pioneering member of the improv group, the Groundlings. Is it the Groundlings or just Groundlings?
The Groundlings.
It is the Groundlings.
Right.
Okay, that's good. Here in Los Angeles, you're a director of the school, helped to found the school, right? All that kind of stuff. Why did you come to Los Angeles? Since we're talking about being a newbie, what do you remember about what you felt when you were coming from Chicago to L.A.?
Sheer excitement.
Yeah.
I grew up in Chicago, and I started classes at Second City.
Yep.
And I was there for a few years. I met friends there. And five of us moved here, five of us and my dog then, Aretha, moved here and drove across country. We formed our own group in Chicago. We were doing sketches and improv. And then we had to go either to Los Angeles or New York, right? So we figured, one, it's easier to starve in sunshine. And two, my brother Alan was out here and he was writing for Laugh-In.
Laugh-In.
Well, you said you were in advertising, right?
I am.
Oh, you are? Okay.
Yeah.
My brother was in Chicago.
Okay.
And you remember Screaming Yellow Zonkers at all?
The candy.
Yes, or, with the jokes all over the box.
I don't remember those. I don't know if we had them in Philadelphia, but I remember.
It was a very big deal when it came out. My brother wrote the box. And so George Schlatter called him from... California said, "I want to have a meeting with you," and he hired him for Laugh-In. And then my brother had a writing career, so he said, "Come out."
I like your immature humor, short jokes that could fit on a box of candy. Yeah,
right,
that's what we need for the show.
And
that makes sense.
It was great. First of all, the agency Hervis Binzer and Churchill won every award possible that year for the packaging, for everything, and it was a black box, and then. Jokes and pictures and fabulous drawings, and on the side there was a list, things you can do with screaming yellow zonkers, and one of them was you can read to them. That's my brother Alan.
There you go.
So anyway, we moved out here, and we started performing at the Comedy Store, and we would be put on either at the beginning or the end as the change of pace, because we were
from
a group.
The stand-up guys, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And we were called Mother's Kisses.
All right.
And one of the guys in the group saw a new group perform, and Bill Steinkellner and I, who were in the group and were a couple at the time, wanted to get into another class. So we said, okay, we'll check it out. And we checked out the Groundlings at the Oxford Theater, where there were more people on stage than in the audience,
right,
only because the audience only fit something like 38 people. And we talked to Gary Austin afterwards, and he invited us into the company. And you had to earn your way into the show,
sure,
but that was the beginning of my whole life taking a turn.
Yeah, I love that. You never know when, yeah, when a door is going to open and everything in your life is going to change.
But I came out here to act and to write, and I knew I would always be improvising. But if any, to anybody out there listening who is a newbie, if you're looking for a career in improv, just get into therapy right now. There's no improv industry.
There's no well, now that is really contrary to what a lot of people think or seem to be doing, right?
I know, but a lot of people think, you know, that Trump is doing a great job,
okay,
and, you know, and a lot don't. So,
well,
yeah,
when I said you're a comedian, yeah, you said, no, I'm an improviser, yeah, I'm an actor.
Right.
Sometimes people laugh, but that's a different...
That's what I do, and it's a creative way of life, and I will never stop. I think all the rules of improv apply, yeah, everywhere, but I'm talking about making money. You get on Whose Line Is It Anyway, or you don't work as an improviser for money.
It's a tool. It's a,
yeah,
thing that helps all these other, mm-hmm, kinds of things. Now, you mentioned, I did want to ask a question as a lifelong improviser.
Yes.
I am curious, what can we learn from improvisation about life off stage?
You learn that it's not all about you. Mm-hmm. You learn that you do better by collaborating. You learn to share. You learn to trust yourself. And trust your instincts, and stop using only your head, and let all of you get into the equation. There's probably those, much more than that.
Those things sound simple, but they're scary. A lot of those things are scary.
Sure, they are.
Right, not just listening to your head, but listening to the rest of your system or rest of your body.
Life is scary. I mean, it's you know, you come into it in a pretty terrifying way, you know, and then it
that
just
whole squirted through.
Yeah,
a
your whole like, wait a minute! I was really comfortable. Yeah. What is this? You know, I mean, it's thrilling too. I mean, life. Yeah, it's
well,
thrilling.
Near death experiences are always thrilling.
Yeah, yeah. But I think that it's you learn to do it anyway, even though you're afraid, unless. Obviously, it's your instinct is telling you, no, this is really a bad move.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
To me, that's one of the best things is you don't have to not be afraid, but to keep going.
It's safe on
afraid.
The edge.
It's safe on the edge?
In theater, it is.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean, oh, let's just go do something dangerous and
sure.
leave everybody else on the stage hanging out to dry.
Sure.
You know.
Sure. But it's personal
yeah.
edges, right?
Mm-hmm.
Some people want to live their whole life in a comfort zone, and that's
right.
great, and some people are not interested in that.
Right. Yeah. And you also learn agreement, mm-hmm. to be in agreement, and to discover and stop trying to force things and plan it.
Yeah.
You know, there's nothing quite like discovering, and that even works in scene work when you make a discovery. As opposed to think of something really funny. It's that combination of high focus and letting go simultaneously.
Yes. Well, that's what makes it like a sport.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right.
Why
and when
they
you
say comedy, sports, and all that,
right.
this is the part that's like a sport. Focus and letting go.
Well, what you said it a minute ago, zone, getting into a zone.
Into the zone, yeah. Yeah. Well, as an actor, I think that's where I want to work.
Right.
The script, the words are written, there are some things that have to happen. All that stuff is not my interpretation. Like, what am I doing there? And if I have a plan, I know exactly what's happening, my work is not as good. If I'm always... Hey!
That's me doing a character.
Always a little on the edge. Dear Chester, come back. He'll be fine.
One of my teachers,
yes,
not an improv teacher, but one of my teachers, Ian Tucker, used to say to us, your job isn't to write the script or judge a script, just bring it to life. So you want to do that with yourself, too, right?
Bring yourself to life.
Bring it to life.
Now, I know you said you're not a comedian, but you have done all kinds of comedy work.
Yeah.
Right?
I didn't say I don't think I can be funny.
I understand that. I understand. Some things I noted that I thought were interesting. Reno 911. I love that show. You did some voices for the new Scooby and Scrappy-Doo show. Uh-huh. I always like Scooby-Doo. Cheech and Chong's next movie. And then the thing you mentioned, this 2014 film, Zombievers.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, what... tell us a little bit about Zombievers.
I had so much fun. Well, what most importantly...
Tell people what it is, because it might not be immediately obvious.
Well, if you're into horror films, it is obvious, probably, because people into horror films, from what I understand, see all of them.
Yeah.
And, it was... it's about some kind of toxic spill in a small town, and the beavers drink from the water, and they become evil and monsters, and then they attack people. And
killer
then,
zombies.
Yeah.
Killer zombie beavers.
Yeah. Yeah, and then the people turn into beaver-like zombies.
Oh, I didn't see that.
So
part.
This was really fun because I got to play this this neighbor who knew the young kids, one of the young girls. And then, spoiler alert, I do get killed and turn into a zombie, which I've always wanted to do. I always
get
wanted
to
do
be a zombie.
Not in real life, but I always wanted to be in a horror film and get to be some kind of monster in it, And I had...
do you kill anyone?
I go after somebody, okay. She gets away, but second spoiler alert. But they fitted me for these teeth. And they put they applied these horrible open wounds to my face. It was so much fun to see that because it looked so real. And I took pictures in the trailer to show friends, and it was wonderfully gross. The most exciting part for me, though, was going to the shop when I got the teeth fit to see how they make these figures, and they had baby infant dolls that they use in television shows when somebody's holding a baby, and they seem absolutely real. And the same thing with the...
Did they make those look like zombies? Baby zombies?
Well, they just had things from other shoots.
Oh,
I see. They also had Ted the teddy bear in there when I went there. But just to see the work they do and how realistic it is was thrilling.
Well, this movie looks fun. You know, it is like many of these horror comedy slasher things. A group of ridiculously good-looking young people go away for a weekend at some cabin in some idyllic place next to the lake. And of
exactly.
Course,
that's exactly what it is.
Zombie beavers that come to life.
And, but it was fun. I mean, it was fun and funny.
Well, Jesus Christ, I hope so. If that's not fun, nothing can be fun.
Right. Anyway, everybody was... great. It was really fun.
One other thing I noticed, it said it has an R rating on this movie for crude sexual humor. And I was like,
I didn't know that.
That's the whole reason to make the movie, is crude sexual humor. That's basically the...
It's becoming the only way to make any movie that isn't a historical drama. I would like to make the crude sexual historical film, which is probably what it really was,
A crude sexual historical film.
So biopic. Crude sexual.
So where? Who's Ben Franklin would be good for that?
Yeah. Well, any of the founding fathers who are now becoming the rock stars of
But I think especially Ben Franklin. He had a reputation for being a boozer, a womanizer, and then he was our first ambassador to France, and so he went to Paris and he just partied. He just partied like it was 1779.
Yeah. Well,
as much as he could.
Yeah.
Yeah, they loved him. The French loved him because he was...
Well, the French loved Jerry Lewis.
Well, he was smart and creative. And
he had a reputation, too.
He loved to party, Ben Franklin.
He loved it. Jerry Lewis loved to party before that was a verb.
Yeah. Jerry Lewis did?
Yeah.
Was he a big partier?
No, I don't know.
I don't know.
Well, I know...
We can make anything up. Is he still alive? He is still
alive. Yeah, he is. I got to be careful.
He doesn't listen to the show.
You never know.
No, look. He's not listening to the show.
You do not know what celebrities do in the middle of the night.
That's true. That's
somebody
I do you know what a celebrity does? Any celebrity in the middle of the night?
Well, I do know that somebody I know peripherally, was on a public access show in the middle of the night once. I mean, it aired in the middle of the night. Remember public access?
Yes.
Channel 3.
Yes.
And she was talking about a book she wrote, and Marlon Brando was watching, and he called her to, you know, talk about something.
Talk about the book. Yeah. Let me just kind of talk.
Sure.
He's quiet. Jester, are you here?
So you have to make sure he didn't run away to join the circus.
No, he's not.
It's a little doggy.
Now, what do you want to talk about? You got anything to plug, promote, announce?
Right now I'm working with the L.A. Opera, the Young Adult Program. This is my seventh year, but we started doing shows every so often. So they pick, they select 8 to 10 people for a two-year program.
Okay.
And they're staggered, you know.
And how young are these people?
They're 20s,
okay.
30s, you know,
so
early
really
30s.
Young,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, children.
Kids.
And
barely
and,
legal.
and they come in to this program, and I was asked to come in and put together a program to teach them another way to be on stage.
Right.
Because their program is so exacting that they almost have to learn how to screw up, and it's fine. And they're so gifted, because by the time I get them, they're so developed.
Yeah, they're trained.
You know, and
they've
so
been in it for years.
I mean, they're chosen
sure.
because of their talent. So I get them, and then
you just have to mess some stuff up.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, that's good. That's the best job in the world, to go in and be the person that...
But it's not just, you know, regular improv. Half of it is improv games designed to relate to what they would use them for. And then the second half, we work on their arias and their duets and different things like that. We're doing two shows at the Groundlings.
With the LA, with the opera.
Uh-huh, and some musical improvisers.
Cool.
From
the that should be fun. You got a new book.
Well, I have a book I wrote a few years ago that's on Amazon. It's called Hip Wrecked.
Yep.
And it's...
That's me. Oh, gosh. Look. Look, the host
My
of the
goodness,
show.
Somebody is really looking for you.
Just, you know what happens now? All your devices ring. Does that happen at your house, too?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I thought that was at my. It does within a second if they don't get me on the landline.
Everything
they get
rings
me on the,
at the same time, so then you don't actually know where the phone is because the computer and the iPad and the laptop and the phone, everything's ringing.
And you know that everything breaks at the same time too.
I'm waiting.
If your
for
washer
that.
Breaks, the dryer breaks, and the stove breaks.
I'm waiting for that to happen.
And
so, tell us about Hip Wrecked.
Okay.
The subtitle is "My health insurance sucked, so I went to India
for surgery." Yes, I have always kept myself healthy and in shape. So I thought I had a soft tissue problem. Long story short, it turned out that I needed my hip joints replaced. And I thought, wait a minute, I'm too young and I'm too thin for this. What's going on? And they said, well, it's probably a genetic predisposition that you know, things were, that bones were pressing against each other.
Maybe you're related to like a Great Dane or Labrador.
Yeah, I am.
Hip problems. Like
probably
that.
Not a Great Dane.
Yeah.
A Great Litvak maybe or something. But I was pretty devastated, and at the time had insurance that just, surprise, didn't cover enough of it, and it was going to cost so much to have the surgery here, it was not affordable. So my husband and I, my husband remembered that there was a show, a 60 Minutes episode we'd seen a couple years before about medical tourism. I did not want to do that. But I also didn't want to walk around in pain all the time. And so he looked it up, found an agency that thinks of everything when you don't have the presence of mind to do it. And the choice was between, for this kind of surgery, was between India and Thailand. And the problem with Thailand was that they made you come there first for a consult. And also, they didn't necessarily all speak enough English. Your doctor would. Whereas in India, most of the staff would be speaking English. And we also looked up to see what the, what do they call it, the sterility rate was in the hospital. And all that was good. It was a new hospital. And so off we went. I had not planned to write a book. Who would want to read a book about that, the way I just described it? But I had friends who were flipped out that I was going, and they said, you got to let us know you're okay, meaning that you're still alive. You know.
Please let us know you're still alive. Yeah. Hi.
I took my computer with me. I wrote for the first 5 days, and then after the – I wanted to wait until the surgery – I think I wrote it after the first surgery. They did it a couple of days apart. Okay. Each. I might have waited till both. I don't remember anymore. But I waited for that, and then I sent all the 5 days. And because the time is different, I would write this, go send it, go to sleep. Everybody would be waking up, and they would have their morning coffee, and they would read my emails. Within 24 hours, I had 25 emails, and I didn't feel like I was so far away from home. So I kept writing, and people kept wanting more. So I thought they're interested. So the next thing that happened was, through my misery about all this, I started looking for things to entertain my friends. And I started noticing things I might not have noticed. Plus, I had an extraordinary experience. My doctor and I are still friends. And it was too much to talk about here, but yeah. It was wonderful. And people started to say, you have a book.
So did you do this in Delhi, or where did it happen?
No, Mumbai? I just finished all the
where's
emails.
Where's the operation?
Oh, the operation was in Delhi, right just outside of Delhi, okay. In Gurgaon. And then I went to a guest house for people recovering from this, from various things, for the rest of the stay. I was there 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. And I came back, and I looked at what I had, and I took out all the in-jokes, and now that I was no longer on medication, I could remember things I didn't remember while I was writing it. And then I went back and wrote the narrative.
Tell us one funny, interesting, curious thing that happened in there.
Oh, there were so many. Well, one night I was working a Sudoku puzzle online, and one of the sisters, who were like the nurses, the nurses' aides, really, you know, that came in, and she spoke very little English, but somehow we were managing to communicate. And she was asking me how that worked, and she spoke Tamil. That was her main language. So I Googled it and showed her how to work a Sudoku in Tamil, gave her the instructions. So that was pretty fun.
Had you been to India before?
No. Yeah. No, it was shocking.
It's
it was
really
shocking.
Different.
We got out of the airport and into the car that was taking us to the hospital, and the first thing I saw was, this is 1 a.m, I saw a guy walking down the street with a cow.
Yeah.
And, you know, I like animals. But yeah. I thought, what's a cow doing out that late?
Yeah. Well, yeah. What's the cow doing?
It was real culture shock.
Yeah, it is. It's so different.
You've been there?
Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, you just, every reference point that we have that mm-hmm. you assume all this
completely
is normal
different.
In life.
Including
different.
A certain level of kindness.
Did you find Indians kind or not kind?
Completely kind.
Very kind. That's what I thought, yeah.
Completely kind.
Absolutely.
I was standing in an emporium with a walker, and my husband was looking at something up a staircase that I couldn't get up because the steps were too narrow. So I was standing there, and I was tired. And by the way, I was the only blonde in India, which is the title of one of the chapters, because I looked like...
That's not easy. That part is not easy.
No, everybody just was looking at me like I was E.T. Yeah. But this, I was standing at the walker, and this woman was walking out, a middle-aged Indian woman, walking out, and she turned around and walked back in and said to me, "What happened?" And I said, "Oh, I just had hip joint surgery." And she said, "Here?" And I said, "Yes, I had a very good doctor. It was totally successful. I'm going to be fine." She said, "Oh." And then she walked out. And then she came back in again, and she said, "How are you doing?" And I said, I'm doing well, thank you. And she said, "Well, good luck to you." And she walked out. And all I could think of was, If I had been walking around like that in Beverly Hills with a walker, people would have gone to the opposite side of the street. Yeah. Yeah, and I'm not picking on Beverly Hills. That just came to mind.
No, anywhere. Yeah.
Let's
big cities, especially here.
It's
people there are very kind. They're curious. Yeah. Like you said, you look blonde hair, blue eyes. You attracted a lot of attention. So
children looked at me like I was a snowman.
Yeah.
Because I had this one white skirt was the only thing I could fit into because my hips swelled up 10 inches. And I have almost boy hips.
Yeah.
So it was suddenly I was Sophia Loren in my mind, but not quite. And
only from the waist down.
Yeah, from the hips down, yeah.
And so a little kid, the kids.
They would just stare at me like because I was so pale. And you know, I've got this walk. It was pathetic.
Was that uncomfortable? Because I've had friends and people say I was there, and I just couldn't get away. It was really uncomfortable to be noticed that much.
No, I got it, and nobody was... The thing was, they weren't being negatively judgmental. They knew who I was. It's not like I had antenna, you know. They got it.
Right.
But, I got... Plus, you know, I'm on stage, I'm on film, you're looking at me, it's not the worst thing in the world. It's only I just don't like it because I didn't look good,
right.
You know.
Now, something when I was preparing this suggested to me that you would be good at writing an advice column. I'm not sure where that came from. But I'm not sure what you would give advice about. Do you have any idea if you were going to do an advice column? How could you advise people?
You have to ask the person who suggested that.
Part of my. It was me. Somehow I suggested.
Oh,
but
I see.
I
you
don't
said
know.
So.
That's all I
well,
got.
Well, here's the deal. I mean, I am. I guess the type of person that some people come to for advice. People will call me and they'll
say,
"You're
a busybody."
What should? No, they come. They ask me what I should do. I don't tell them what they should do unless they ask me. I always have an opinion. But I don't mean that everybody asks me. I just think I have a lot of students. Why wouldn't they?
Okay.
You know, I've been doing this longer, or I have had a lot of students. But my friends and I, we all ask each other for advice. I'm not really sure. I mean, I always take that as a compliment. Somebody wants my opinion and something and my advice. And but for me, just to... decide how everybody should live their lives. I don't have any interest in that.
All right, so that was a crappy question.
Cross that one.
Didn't work, actually. how old were you when you first ran away from home?
Are you talking about moving away or just...
Ran away
literally,
from home.
I never ran away from
you
home.
You never ran away from home?
I never ran away. I threatened as a little kid, but I never did it. I liked my home.
So you had a happy childhood?
Not necessarily.
You scared?
Yes
you were
and no.
Of
no.
Running away?
Sure I was. I mean, I had really thick glasses and I'm the youngest of three. And it's probably no accident at all I wound up being on stage so somebody would listen to me cuz everybody was older and but it was a wildly dysfunctional home in a lot of ways, but my brothers and I were very close, and my parents unfortunately died in each case unexpectedly young, in their 60s. But it was wild in our house. You know, we valued having a good time, and everybody was very dramatic, and you know, it was just always kind of a either a party or some drama going on. And most of the time, I didn't want to run away. You just wanted to run away if you didn't get your own way. If you didn't get something you wanted.
People may have all different reasons for running
away.
Yeah,
no.
You never ran away. Didn't even have like the, I ran around the block and I thought I was going to.
Oh, I probably did that. But no, yeah. I don't remember that being traumatic. I probably did. I know there are times I did a lot of door slamming and storming out of the house and not coming back for a long time. But it never got to running away. You know what, underneath it all, I couldn't do that to my parents because I loved them.
That's totally not funny to have a...
No.
You know, I love my parents. We had a good family.
No, I didn't say we weren't dysfunctional and completely nuts. My relatives, nuts. It was insane, but not...
You didn't run away.
I didn't run away.
Is your family musical? Because you sing and,
my oldest brother, Stu, is a highly accomplished jazz musician, bebop stuff. And my parents told me that when he was a kid, they would sneak him into clubs that he was too young to be in, and he was the only white kid in the band. You know, they used to take him under his wing, all the jazz musicians. But he was...
What does he play?
Vibes and piano. Okay. And he's most recently played... Well, he most recently played at the Chicago Jazz Festival. And then... but I've heard him here. He'll play at vibrato sometimes when he comes to town. And my father was a vaudevillian.
That makes sense.
Song and dance man. My mother played the piano, not professionally, but she played beautifully and played by ear. And my brother, Alan, comedy writer. And so the whole family was into, if you can entertain me, you can sit at the table.
All right. So, why run away from home under that?
Well, there was always somebody there I still was aligned with, you know?
Yeah. It's funny when people mention the vibes. I just remember Woody Allen used to have a line where he said that he enjoyed playing the vibes because it soothes his sexual tension.
God. Yeah.
It was creepy then. It's creepy now.
Creepier now.
Yeah, maybe creepier now. As a child, you had an imaginary friend.
I did. Her name was Fussy.
Fussy.
Mm-hmm. And Fussy was who I blamed things on. If I got in trouble, I would say, I didn't do it. Fussy did it. That's all I remember about her. That's not even my memory. It's everybody else's memory of what I did.
Well, the rest of the question was, as a child, you had an imaginary friend. Your imaginary friend also had an imaginary friend.
Oh.
So who do you think Fussy's imaginary friend could have been?
Me.
You were her imaginary friend.
Yeah, she was from another dimension. And
did she blame things on you?
Probably. No, I don't know. I really don't remember the feeling of it. In fact, I hadn't thought of her till you said that right now, and it made me laugh.
But your parents or your older siblings said, oh yeah, you had this.
Oh yeah, yeah. And my parents, they used to, they all have the things they make fun of you for.
Oh yeah.
And one of them was what I mentioned before, walking out and slamming the door. They would wait for it. I'd get up and run away from the table, kitchen table, and then I'd hear one of my brothers say, wait for the slam,
Here it comes.
It slammed the door and they'd all burst out laughing, and it just defeated my whole purpose.
Did it make you really? Did it piss you off?
Of course. I wanted to be taken seriously. I was mad,
Door slamming.
Yeah.
Now, I have this question. I think that people have a superpower.
Ooh.
And you may not necessarily have thought about it like that, but it's some quality that you just channel that just wants to come through you. You don't have to try hard or put it on. It's just a thing that happens. Do you have any sense of what that might be for you?
I think in terms of abilities or things that in moments will really shine through. But I do believe that your superpowers are defined by other people seeing them.
Yes.
Like when Gary Austin, who founded the Groundlings, had just passed away, everybody the other night, when everybody was talking about what his impact was on them and what it was he specifically brought to them, I don't think he knew that when he was doing it. I told him recently what had meant so much to me, not knowing that he was going to die, and he said, oh, Would you say that to Steve White, who's writing an oral history of us? So I do think I mean, there's a place I go to when I'm in any of my work, in any of my creative work, where something's coming through me, and if I could only figure out how to get to that, like a time warp almost, and go through it, then I would just do it all the time, and just so I keep taking steps. As a teacher...
Well, wait, before you go on. So that state or quality, I mean, mm-hmm. it's an experience you're having.
Mm-hmm.
What do you feel? I mean, how do you know when you're in that place? What do you?
I know it when I come out of it.
When you come out of it.
Well, more or less. I mean, I know that. Or no, that isn't 100% true. Sometimes I feel it. But if you're truly in it, then you're in it, and you're not observing it. I will tell you one thing that happened. I was doing a show. I have a character that I have done, Gloria French, who's a lounge singer in a bowling alley. And she's...
You made a short film with her? Or a play?
No, I did. Yeah, I did shows. I've done a number of shows. And she started out at the Growlings. Okay. And I would improvise a song. And I improvised a song in the show, but I've written several shows and had a band. And she's the most codependent person on the planet, but she's very sweet and makes excuses for the people who abuse her. And there was a night that I was singing a song. I was doing the show and at the Steve Allen Theater. And
they're closing that, aren't they?
I just heard that.
Anyway, keep going.
It's a terrible thing because it was a great little theater.
Little theater, yeah.
And I was, the whole show was just going as well as anybody could ever hope it could. We were just having a ball. And I got to this one song that I had written the lyrics for. My keyboard player, Wynn Meyerson, had written the music. So it was our song, and he was playing. And when it ended, it got this thunderous response. And I turned around to smile at him with a lot of excitement. During the applause, I turned around to smile at him, and I saw myself turn around to smile at him. So I guess that's leaving your body. It's the only time I've ever felt that. So there are moments when you're so into it that you only know that when you come out for a second and say, oh, wow, this is fantastic. This is working. Or, oh, my God, I've just written for 4 hours. I sat down and didn't think I could do half an hour. So that, to me, is superpower.
Okay.
Or when you affect somebody in a way you never had any idea you were going to affect them. And how do you plan that? You can't plan that. You try
to. Superpower is a thing that in comic books either gets discovered or bestowed upon you.
And, right. And you usually don't want it.
No, they usually don't want it. And it doesn't make their life easier. Yeah. And, you know, what am I going to do?
See, people want to be superheroes, and superheroes want to be people. And my theory on all this,
that's,
and I'm trying to write a song about this. I haven't got it down yet. But here's the idea. Everybody just wants to belong and fit in. And then they want to stand out from the group they fit in with. And then they want to fit in with the group of people who stand out. And then they want to stand out from that group they fit in with. And so there's no satisfaction in
I think you're right.
In that search.
Yeah. So it's like Russian dolls that fit inside.
Exactly.
Of onion peeling or, yeah. No, I think that's funny. You want to stand out and then fit in with the group
that stands out. And then you want to stand out from the group that you just want to fit in, and then you just want to be noticed. And then you want to not be noticed so much, but you want to, I sometimes wonder about people who've been in prison and they get out and they just want to be left alone. I think they got it right.
Yeah,
I just want to do something, have enough money, have a good time, and leave me alone. Oh, isn't the air beautiful today?
Or they just want to have a job and go about their lives in a normal way, which is not easy, though, when you get
out
of prison.
I'm sure it's not.
Well, we just, you can't vote, and your record comes with you, and it's hard to get a job, and, we don't make it easy for them to become.
No, we don't make it easy for each other at all.
No, we don't.
And I sometimes fantasize that if money were no object, seriously no object, that I would be working for the Innocence Project.
I thought you were going to say you would become an ex-convict.
Yeah, I would become. I want to just get to the ex part.
What's the Innocence Project?
Oh, you don't know about that?
I don't know.
The Innocence Project works to help people get released from prison who've been who are innocent.
Yeah.
And I mean, they sometimes do the work and find it and don't find evidence, but a lot of times they do.
People that are convicted wrongly.
Wrongly.
Right? DNA tests or other kinds of evidence come up.
Right, but okay, they have to find it. Yeah.
All right. Here's another question.
Okay.
You have a somewhat quirky sleeping or bedtime ritual. What is it?
Well, I wouldn't know about my sleeping ritual because I'm asleep. But although my husband says sometimes he wakes up and I have one arm in the air and the other arm is massaging my arm from the wrist to the shoulder. You know, like he said sometimes he sees that. I'm utterly clueless. Okay, that's the thing I've never told anybody. It sounds gigantically weird.
You sometimes massage your own arm.
Not a whole massage, exactly. He just sees me kind of stroke my arm from the wrist to the shoulder in the middle of the night.
But it's up in the air like you're hailing a cab. Or
yeah, it's up, well, perpendicular to the
right.
To my body. But ritual, I get in bed and I'm reading Italian, trying to learn Italian, which I started learning in college and, of course, forgot all of. And I want to learn it again fluently, and I just need the time and the money. And so I have an Italian textbook, and I sometimes read that before I go to sleep and work on it, or I work puzzles, or I read.
Not quirky.
Not quirky.
But now I want to connect the studying Italian with the raising your arm in the middle. I mean,
no, it's not related because that was before. I don't even know if I do it anymore.
No, if they're not related, you're asleep. This is all your subconscious working.
That's true.
They could be related.
Never know. I'm trying to think it. No, I don't have any strange rituals.
No. Okay. All right. Well, here's another question. Well, here's something. On your website, you said that you have done some work for this organization that is called OurLA.org.
I wrote an article for that website.
You did an article?
It was a website, and I don't even know if they're still in existence, but I wrote I wrote an article about the Virginia Avenue Project.
Well, but here's the thing. I went to that site twice, and this is what is on it.
Well, then it's not RLA anymore.
It's all in, I don't even know what this is, Japanese or Chinese, but.
I don't either.
It looks like Japanese.
It's a little anime figure. Well, then it's not in existence anymore. I probably should remove that credit.
This is not the thing that you wrote for? You didn't write anything in Japanese?
They may have translated it. If I could do this, I could have a diplomatic career.
It looks like a picture of a foot and a kid, and it's like an instructional textbook of some sort.
Yes.
So you really had my curiosity piece.
No, RLA.org was about the city, but this was, you know, several years ago. It was about the city, and there were just all different things about Los Angeles, and I wanted to let people know about the Virginia Avenue Project, but they are now defunct after 25 years.
Well, this looks like a textbook about how to be a chiropodist for children.
It does. It looks like and with a little anime figure.
Yeah.
This will mean nothing to anybody listening, but this is bizarre. Go look it up.
I'm going to post a picture of that.
Post that, and then I think you should give a prize for the best caption.
Chester, to explain this.
Yeah.
Or to make some sort of sense.
Well, the caption under the girl with the bubble is though it's a bubble that suggests something's being said, but instead of words in it, it's a little anime figure half in it and half out of it.
Well, but it's like a speech bubble. The book is speaking.
Right.
And the book is saying either.
It's saying little girl foot. That's what it's saying.
Yeah, well,
or foot little girl.
Two different phrases.
Foot loose. Yeah. Foot.
Okay. All right. Well, we're gonna move on now. Have you been listening to the show at all?
Not this show.
No, that's all right. You're
I didn't
in the
know about it, and yeah,
you're in the majority.
Well, I will be listening, not just to this one. This will be hard for me to listen to myself, but I'll listen.
You can do it. People who come on the show, I have to tell them that 20 something years ago, I had an idea that if I really wanted to do something good for the world and make a contribution, that I could give permission to some friends and family to hit me in the face with a pie anytime.
Wow.
Because, you know, usually if you throw a pie at someone, it's mean.
Uh-huh.
And when you receive a pie, it's aggressive. But I wanted to remove that and give people permission to do something they really wanted to do. So in the past 25 years, I've been hit in the face with a lot of pies. And it's a delightful thing for me and for the people. So here's the question. You're going to do this.
Oh.
You're going to give permission to some person to hit you in the face with a pie. And my question is, if you could choose anyone, living or dead throughout history, to hit you in the face with this pie, who would you like to be the person throwing the pie?
Stan Laurel.
Stan Laurel.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, tell me, what would that be like for you to...
It would be an honor. I mean, sweet from the era of pie throwing, probably never got to be the mean guy. And I know he wouldn't hurt me. And I loved him. I don't know. That's the name that came up instantly.
And yeah, you would receive it with love and generosity, and he would throw it with love and generosity.
Yeah.
So it's totally different kind of experience. Yeah. Stan Laurel. It popped up really fast.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No, I just when you said from any point in history, I started thinking of the pie throwing era, and I wouldn't want Charlie Chaplin to do it.
Because
his reputation was brilliant, but not very nice.
Okay. So no Charlie Chaplin.
No, maybe Buster Keaton. He would be good too.
Okay, but Stan Laurel, we'll go with Stan.
See what a feminist I am. I didn't pick one woman
to
hit me in the face.
One woman to be hit in the face with a pie. Now, there's one last thing I like to do on the show, which is to anagram stuff.
Okay.
To see what happens. And, you know, sometimes there are some alternate meanings or things that are revealed.
Okay.
And sometimes not. So, here, let me, I'll show you what I got here. So, like this first one, might not be that interesting to us. I anagrammed for zombievers,
mm-hmm.
and the only thing that seemed interesting was zebras move.
That's good, because they do. And in that movie, it was extraordinary how they would make them move. I mean, how they design these things. So that works for me.
Zebras move. Okay, mm-hmm. Zombievers. All right, let's see if anything else starts to ring a bell here. I anagrammed health insurance.
Unchased inhaler. I love that.
Right? One of them is unchased inhaler. What works for you there? What's happening?
Oh, I mean, the way the system is, it's all about inhaling all the money and not being quite clean about everything.
All right, so
I
that
love
seems
that.
Descriptive. Unchased, unchased inhaler.
Yeah.
What else are you like?
What's this from? Health insurance, too?
Yeah, all of those.
Oh, all these are health.
Read it, since you were laughing about it.
Her nautical hens.
I like that one because I saw a bunch of chickens with these little sailor outfits, you know,
uh-huh.
like those little the caps and the tie and the stuff, and it just made me laugh because I'm not sure why. Because it's a duck outfit, but now you have it on a chicken.
Right.
But you laughed at that, too.
Well, I mean, I think anagrams are fun. I think it's in word games. I love word games. And so I think all this is fun. Launch's hairnet is pretty great, too.
I wasn't sure how to make that make sense, but...
Well, I mean...
It doesn't have to.
Do we have to tie connection?
No,
I don't know what my...
with the hens, I just got an image that was interesting, so...
Well, Launch's hairnet. I see somebody taking the hairnet, you know, with one finger, and then the other hand pulls it back, and it... Launches it forward almost like a slingshot.
Yeah, or like a
maybe that's what the cafeteria women do when the day's over. You know, yeah, bang.
Like Mary Tyler Moore at the beginning of the thing.
Yeah, well, more
up.
Yeah, more like a little more rebellious.
Day of school. They do it to the eighth graders on the last day of school. They launch their hairnet.
Yeah.
This one, a hairsuit channel. I just got curious. You know, we have all these cable TV channels now. There's something for everything.
Right.
So what would be the hairsuit channel, the hairy channel? What would be on that?
Gorilla documentaries.
Oh, gorilla documentaries. Okay, so you could have gorilla documentaries. I also thought there could be, you know, a regular program about those gay men who are the bears.
Like yes.
Kind of chubby, hairy. Yeah, so
I think that
could fit.
I think you got another reality show.
Back waxing documentaries on the hairsuit channel.
Count me in.
Right.
Ooh. No,
I'm not saying it's for everybody, right? This
no, is nothing is for
cable
everybody.
TV is that, you know, it's somebody's always somebody watching, no matter how few.
Why don't you tell me how you came up with Tush Canal Herein?
Well, it's an anagram for
health
insurance.
It came out of you.
Canal Herein. I just thought that would be possibly a new butt tattoo in case, because people have tramp stamp butt tattoos or other kinds of things. But this one could be, informative. Tush Canal Herein. I mean, there's Tush Canal here.
I'm just going to move on to the next one on this one.
You're not with me. Go on.
All right, I'm with you.
What's
I'm with you. Let
one?
Me
What's no.
Let me do it.
No. This is what this
right.
is the game. We're trying to.
Inert lunches. Okay. I want my lunch to be inert.
You do.
I don't want to see stuff moving when I'm about to eat.
You don't like to eat things that are still alive.
No, I'm not for the. I'm not for the. Let's watch the lobster move around and then stick it on the plate and boil it. And no.
Right.
But I'm a vegetarian anyway, so.
Oh, well, then you definitely.
So you don't want to get into that whole thing with me. It's going to.
Live.
You lose half your viewers, and the other half will love you more.
I don't know that half any listeners already. Inert lunches. Again, I got a little kind of lunchroom thing. Maybe it goes with the launches.
Hairnets
that. Yeah, that towards the end, they see that there are some lunches that haven't been eaten. They're just sitting there. And anyway. All right.
Do you have more anagrams?
Unchaste inhaler. That one we liked.
We did.
Yeah, let's see what else we got. Now this one. This might lose me some listeners, too.
Okay.
L.A. Opera. A rape, low. I mean, I think just feel like low, a rape. I feel like in the opera, that's the way they would talk about sexual assault. Low. No?
I would have changed it to a pair, low. P-E-A-R.
A pair?
Uh-huh.
What does that have to do with the opera?
Well, at least it's not a rape joke.
Okay, I wasn't sure that was going to work. That didn't work. Rape jokes, I understand, not very popular. It wasn't even a joke.
I understand.
They still have those.
I'm not judging you. I'm just not engaging it.
In the opera. It still exists, right? I mean, part of the text. All right, young artists, because you're doing it.
It's your angst.
It's your angst. Young artist, it's your angst. That seems right.
It's angsty to be a young artist anyway.
It should be.
It's angsty to be an old artist. It's just really angsty unless you're George Clooney, and he probably has his own angst too,
I hope so. I liked this one. This seemed just right.
Sings a tryout.
Right? You're a young artist. You sing a tryout.
That's
especially
right.
Especially if you're with the L.A. Opera. This one?
Tutor sayings.
Right? When you teach them, you must
that's
have
right.
some sayings. They get used to saying, Phyllis has, that's one of her
sayings. One of them is, there's no improv industry. Relax. Relax, there's no improv
there's
industry.
No improv. Now, this one I really liked.
Gustatory sin.
Yes. Gustatory, of course, has to do with tasting things and eating things. And
talking about the large opera singers.
Well, I think it would be a gustatory sin to be tasting or eating a young artist.
Or for a young artist to be eating while they're supposed to be singing.
Yeah, that's true.
Eating while singing is probably a finable offense.
Yeah. No, I went to eating a singer.
Oh.
Yeah, but eating while singing, that's also not good. But eating...
It would be... And now you just get... See, I can't draw it really to save my life, but you just gave me the image of a gigantic singer, mouth wide open, and another singer coming out of that mouth with another little singer. We're back to the nesting dolls.
All right.
Okay, that's
that
the
I like
got.
Now. And who's that guy? Plimpton?
George Plimpton?
The cartoonist?
Oh, no. Yes.
I forget his first name. When you said that image of the singer coming out of the mouth, I saw him. Because it's like a little messy and there's little ink splashes.
Yeah, he should draw it because if I do, you're going to think it's like a dog, driving a car. It's hard for me to do that with figures.
Yeah.
Not true. I can get the point across.
And here's the last one, the groundlings.
The groundlings. Thundering slog. No slog there. There's no slog.
So it's
there.
The opposite.
Yeah.
Of what that is.
That's right. But I like thundering. Goth underlings. You well, that's sort of what groundlings were.
You must have had a few goth underlings when you were, you know, when you run the. Yeah.
Sure.
So that's.
But also,
the
just the whole idea of a groundling is. Of what a groundling really is. They're the people who sat in the pit.
And, yeah.
Because they, you know. So.
Well, that was the original.
Right.
Goth time.
I right. Indulges throng. Well, that would be nice.
Don't you indulge a throng when you get up on stage as an improviser?
I hope it's a throng.
I hope it's a throng,
I like that's a full house, one. But it's more than an indulgence. It's a, it's engages, is the real word,
well,
but it doesn't fit into the anagram.
Well, it doesn't fit.
Right.
I mean, these are just the things that, you know.
Grunted longish.
You must have been in a couple of shows where it felt
like
that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes, some things do go on too long.
Some things go on too long. How about this show? Has this show gone on too long?
No, yet? I'm having a good time. I'm just,
you are?
Yeah.
Because we're kind of out of time.
Oh, we're out of time?
Well,
okay, well, I was getting warmed up. But
you're just getting warmed up?
Yeah.
What are you saving it for?
No, I'm just... No, I'm fine.
You sure?
Yeah. Thinking if there's anything else that's vital. Oh, I want to plug our show, the LA Opera Show.
Well, you should definitely plug your
okay.
show. That's the only reason people come on this show is to plug.
No,
your
I came
other
on
show.
To play, but yes, it's a young okay. adult 2-year program, and they're wonderful. And I've been working with them on improv, and we are doing an all musical show at the Groundlings on Monday, May 15th, and Tuesday, May 16th, called called Opera Meets Improv, and it will be a combination of some LA song improvisers and these young artists, and it will not just be opera. There'll be other kinds of music, but we've done it before. It's a lot of fun.
Are they nervous, the young singers? Because they always sing things that they know, right?
They're nervous, but we've done this before, and I keep saying it doesn't matter what you do. Once you open your mouth, the audience will be in the palm of your hand. You cannot believe these voices.
That part, not the voices, but the part where you don't have to know what you're doing. Just go out and do something. That's the hardest thing.
Well, they know what they're doing. I mean, they will know what it is because we're working on things. But once they get out there, they always do it because they opera singers understand discipline and commitment.
Right.
So
they go for it.
Yeah.
Well, I would like to thank my guest, writer, director, actor, songstress. Very funny, but not a comedian, Phyllis Katz, for coming in this week. If you would like to buy a Comedy Death Star coffee mug, you can email me at comedydeathstar@acsdigital.tv.
I'm holding this up.
It's good, right?
Yeah, I'm holding this up. It's really good. It's black and white with a little bit of red. That's a very classy. You can tell this guy's been in advertising. It's very classy graphic on it. And there's a... the Death Star here.
Death Star, yeah.
And it says "Ask again later," like a magic eight ball.
Like a magic eight ball.
And
that's
really good,
part.
And it looks like it doesn't break easily. And come on, who can't use another mug?
Well, I haven't sold any of these.
Oh, what do you sell them for?
They're about $20 because you got to get them, custom made and printed. But if I sold hundreds, then the price would, of course, come down. But I would recommend that if you are interested in one of these in the least bit, you should get it soon before the Lucasfilm people or Disney sends me a cease and desist letter for using their kind of trademark thing, the image of the Death Star, and then it says Death Star, and, you know, Disney,
Disney
may not like that.
If they're $20 each, what's your incentive?
Who, my incentive?
Yeah. I mean, what's the incentive to buy it? A $20 mug.
Well,
you have to tell them.
You like it, and you might like the show.
Okay, so you do this. This is a way of supporting the show.
Yeah.
And how many do you have to sell to lower the price if somebody buys them in bulk?
I would say even 10 would bring the price down.
Down to what?
$15.
Okay, you see, that's a $5 savings if you just get 9 friends together. And if you don't have at least 9 friends who you know, go get some. You need that in your life anyway. Because some of them are going to disappoint you, and you have 10 friends. I'm telling you, at least 4 of them are going to really let you down, and now you're down to 6. And it's like, can you really count on them? This is how you find out. Say, are you willing to spend $15 on a Comedy Death Star mug to keep a a podcast going, and then you find out who your friends are.
Well, then you could all have them together, and you could all be friends together. See, and right. You said you didn't know what you would give advice about if you had an advice column. Here you are telling people.
No, I give advice when it comes up, but for me to just walk around telling people what to do.
That's not right. Okay. Dylan Vigil. I'm not sure if you know him, but he's our producer and engineer. He works in the office here. Our theme music
was
written.
Sure, I know Dylan.
You know Dylan. Mm-hmm. Yeah, everybody knows Dylan. Theme music was written and performed by Dean Mermel. You don't know him.
I don't know the theme music either.
Well, we have, when you listen to the show, you'll hear
it. Can you sing a little bit for me?
Doot, 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 ba-ba, ba-ba, ba-da-da, doot, doot, doot. So it's kind of a minor key.
That's nice.
Circus-y thing. Because it's dark and Death Star. But
right.
It has a circus-y.
So it's a little scary and comforting at the same time?
Yeah, it's a little Fellini.
Yeah,
kind of,
okay.
Yeah,
that's
way.
Good.
Yeah. Anyway, you'll like it. You've been listening to Comedy Death Star, the official podcast of Actors Comedy Studio right here in Hollywood, USA. I'm your host, Denzel Myers. Thanks for listening. We will be back next week. Thanks for coming.
Thank you.